TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I brought us some harmonicas today. Are you ready for a duet?
Sorry, Chris, you caught me. I don't tell anybody yet. I know it's illegal. I've got the cigar and whiskey. Don't tell anyone. I just, you know, I was a little thirsty.
All right. Note to the galley, cigar and whiskey no longer to be served during podcasts. I love that there's always some sort of illegal alcohol in Star Trek.
There's gotta be.
I imagine after this encounter that Archer and probably Phlox have a case of cigar and whiskey shipped over the neutral zone.
Why wouldn't you? You take some with you, you know? For medicinal purposes, of course.
Of course. You know, when Phlox gets back and he sets up his dentistry office there on Earth, yeah, on the Pacific Coast in San Francisco. Yeah. All right. Today we're going to continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise with episode 9 of season 3. It's North Star. And here's a quick rundown of the story. As they explore the expanse in search of the Zindi superweapon, the Enterprise crew runs across a planet inhabited by humans. Living in a town that looks like it was yanked right out of the 19th century Wild West, these humans love their whiskey and hate the locals. Archer learns that they were brought to the planet by the Skagarans, an alien race that was sourcing slave labor from Earth in the 1860s. As conflict between Archer and the sheriff deputy grows, he takes action to save a teacher who has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for teaching Skagaran children to read and do math. And while he cannot take the humans back to Earth right away, Archer leaves behind materials to help them fill in the lost centuries of progress and build a better society. So, Matthew, this is quite a contrast from what we've been getting here with the Zindi arc, not only in terms of the story, but the look and the feel. Do you remember the first time you saw it? And first of all, did you watch it when it first aired or was it later? And then you saw this kind of like Wild West scene out of the blue.
Yeah. No, I at this point, I was definitely watching Enterprise as it was on television, and as the episodes were being released. Of course, by this point of this season, you know, very invested with what's going on in the season. And yeah, I mean, the cold open in this one with the hanging is quite a shock, because as you're watching the season, I don't think it's expected that you're going to run into this kind of episode. And yet I think the beauty of the episode is it just already immediately stands out, because the choice of cinematography and lighting and all of that is really well done in the episode. And that starts from the beginning, the coloration of the planet and everything.
The color grading is fantastic in this episode,
which having that be different is incredibly interesting as well, and a lot of fun. And so, you know, I think all of that is stuff that really does stand out to you. And then, you know, just as the way in which the episode finds its in to the story of being a Western in this, very intense season. And then the reason, and I think the reasoning for why we would run into something like this, where we are in this season and what's happening this season, all of that, I think, is a really interesting thought process, because, yes, it does give us this opportunity to kind of almost have a breather where we can relax a little bit from the overall mission, yet at the same time create something to which, you know, this really is one of those places where you've created a thread that if the seasons had, you know, Enterprise had run for 7 seasons, you would most likely have seen pulled on then as you went on throughout the series. And so to me, I enjoyed this episode at first run, but I always enjoy actually rewatching it. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I've always loved this episode. I know some people don't. So I think David A. Goodman, who wrote it, has said this himself. It has its fans and it has its haters.
Sure.
I think that how you view it in part depends on your background in Star Trek or your experience in Star Trek. Not for everyone who likes it or dislikes it, but if you're someone like me who started watching the original series in reruns in the 70s as a kid and continued to rewatch those episodes over and over and over before there was anything else, before The Next Generation even came about. And so you love kind of that style of those stories like Spectre of the Gun and Patterns of Force and these other worlds that at the time episodes were created to save money. They didn't have much budget, so they're trying to figure out, well, how can we tell stories with things that we can get our hands on? And so they would come up with this idea of, well, there's a parallel planet development and, you know, these people found a book or had this other influence and they built a society that mirrors Earth. So you're used to those kinds of stories. And so then when you see this come around after so many years with a feel that really feels like one of those original series episodes, but with a modern sensibility and actually has a budget behind it. This episode probably cost them quite a lot of money to make because these were costumes that they had to create for this episode. They didn't rob the wardrobe of another Western show like probably happened in the original series. And the live animals, the horses, the set designs and everything. You know, this is actually a big production and it looks like it, but it feels like that story that you loved when you were a kid. And so for that reason, it always connected with me right from the start. And then watching it as an adult, I liked that it had that added element of is a bit more serious. You know, it wasn't just like a fun episode, but it actually has an important social message that connects more with, well, it's timeless, actually, which is where, you know, a lot of the talk about slavery comes from.
That's a Voyager episode, Chris.
Right. Oh, it is, right. This is not an ice planet. They did not crash here. But the message of it is something that, you know, we're still struggling with today. And actually watching it today in 2025, you can feel that progress is going in reverse in many ways. So anyway, it's an episode that I always liked from the beginning. And I continued to enjoy it, rewatching it for this discussion.
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, you mentioned some of those older episodes that this reminded you of, especially TOS-wise. One of the things that I was thinking of watching it tonight as I was getting ready for this was this really kind of reminded me of a serious version of A Piece of the Action, which is one of my favorite TOS episodes. But, you know, this, you have this arrestedly developed planet. And for these humans then who are in this position, you know, the reason they are the way they are is much more tragic. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I think the conundrum that you end up with then in the episode is that you can actually sympathize with the way in which this society is now functioning and why humans then had reacted the way that they are and still do because of the situation for them being brought here in the first place. And I think as well, you know, even just the area of the country and the United States that they would have been pulled from at that point and the thought processes of the people then. And, you know, we get that whole discussion of the fact that they haven't really evolved or changed. But I think one of the interesting aspects about that becomes they are a very small segment of humanity, right? You know, the reason that the world kind of progresses in any way, shape, or form is because of the influences of the entire world on the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have that. They never got
that. That's a really good point.
And that's, again, I think that's actually the genius of this episode is that I can understand where these characters are coming from. I can understand why they feel the way they do, why they haven't actually really moved forward, and why it would take an outside source to come in and help them kind of see the error of their ways, the way that ends up playing out. And so that, you know, again, it is very much a serious version of a piece of the action where, you know, that society then will change because of an accident that, you know, you got with McCoy leaving his communicator there.
Something followed up on in Enterprise,
exactly,
by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I just, to me, that's what makes this more than just a throwaway episode where we just, oh yeah, we're taking a break and it doesn't really matter, because it becomes one of those hallmarks and one of those benchmarks for me for Enterprise where I'm like, dang it, another reason why it would have been so interesting if we had gotten seven seasons and we could have gone back to this planet and it could have been 3, 4, 5 years and to see how that society had changed.
Another thing about this being a standalone episode, so on the surface, it very much seems like we're just taking a break from the Zindi arc, even more so than Exile, because at least in Exile, there is the connection of trying to find the coordinates for this planet. They're on the search for information about the Zindi, whereas here you don't have that. But there is actually a connection here that I really like, which is that we've talked about before how in their search for the Zindi and their efforts to stop the weapon, Archer has to remind himself sometimes of humanity and like, why are we trying to stop the weapon?
Yeah.
And we don't want to become the very thing that we're trying to stop. And in this society, the humans overthrew the Skagarans who had brought them here for labor and never let go of that. And so they've become the oppressors for all these years and they have no plans to change that. And so they overthrew the people who were oppressing them and then they became the oppressors. And I think that's a subtle connection to the way Archer handles the situation and the way that he resolves the situation. Is it just shows that humanity has to continue to try to help and not be completely driven by fear to the point that you know humans forget who they are. And he gives the whole speech about, or maybe it's not a speech, but he explains how things have changed on Earth over all these hundreds of years. And you know, that's also a reminder of the progress that was made and why it's important not to lose sight of that, even as they're pursuing the Zindi weapon and they want to stop the attack on Earth.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you talked about this idea of it being a standalone. And in some ways, yes, there is a standalone nature to this. But I think one of the geniuses of the episode is that The only reason we happen to be in this area of space, the Expanse, is because of what happened with the Zindi weapon. So if that attack had never happened, you know, this is an area in space that you know, humans would probably not have gone and explored in any way, shape, or form for a much longer period of time than during Archer's time, right?
Because they would have watched all those training videos from the Vulcans and don't go in there.
Yeah, don't go in there. Yeah. And so I think
are you out of your Vulcan mind?
So I really do think that there's something very interesting about the thought process then of that this only works really because of us being on this mission and being in this area of space. And that's what I think makes the episode work as well, because I can really only kind of tell this episode on Enterprise because of the situation that we're in. And that's, you know, I think that's always a hallmark of Star Trek series, right? Of, is an episode one that you could just do on any of the series, or that you could really only do on the series you're watching? And I think, you know, this is one of those episodes where, because of the conventions of Enterprise and this season, this becomes one of those that just wouldn't really fit on any of the other shows the way that it kind of fits here. And I really enjoy that about the episode, and it makes it enjoyable then to be able to watch it, because it doesn't just feel like, oh, we're just taking a break. Mm-hmm. Then that connects with what you said. This also does a great job of reminding Archer of everything that humanity is now, who they used to be, and who they want to continue to progress to be, right? And mm-hmm. and so that's a great reason then to have this kind of sidebar, because it actually is doing something, you know, for your characters. And it also mm-hmm. gives this crew a reason to realize our mission, if we can complete it, can be about continuing to explore the galaxy and finding out mysteries like we just ran into here.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Which, that's fascinating too.
So an important distinction in what you said about, can the story be done on any Star Trek series or only this series, is that, can the story be done in the series without the use of a holodeck? Because you could do this Western-style story, and they did it on The Next Generation.
Right.
You could do it on Voyager. You could do it on DS9, even, using a holosuite. But here, it's actually real life, not a holodeck. You're actually yeah. finding humans in the expanse who need, well, the Skagarans need help, but I would say the humans also need help to
yeah,
get
exactly.
unstuck yeah. from where they are, because they're definitely stuck. And so in that sense, yeah, you could only do this story here. And talking about the TNG Western, which was A Fistful of Datas, a lot of people think about that one, and they reference that when they talk about North Star. And we can chat a little bit about the differences there. I think that, you know, the key thing for me is that I also enjoy A Fistful of Datas, but it's just a fun situation on the holodeck, right? And you
right,
get to hear yeah. Marina Surtees do her Wild West accent and so forth. And Brent Spiner's great in there, of course. But it's just fun, right? And it's very much a Next Generation style of storytelling.
Yes, yeah.
And this one just has so many more layers and depth to it this one is very true to the core of Gene Roddenberry's very vision for Star Trek, I think, because the social commentary is so key. But it's even better for me than the social commentary in the original series, because it is about helping two sides understand a little bit
yes.
more what's going
yep.
on, and then bring them together so that they yes. can try to work towards a better future together, instead of saying, here's what you're doing wrong and here's the right way to do it, and why don't you do it like this, and then break the computer and then fly away, right?
Well, and yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you think about the sheriff in this season, and one of the interesting things that about him is that, you know, he is not vindictive. Mm-hmm. He is somebody who is working to uphold the law, and he understands the reason for why they do what they do, and all of that. And then what's interesting is to see the way in which he is in a place where his mind is willing to be opened to other possibilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, you do have the characters there, like the deputy, who are very much willing to, they want to stay in power. They want to utilize their power for their own gain, for their own benefit. And
I think he likes just harassing people, to be honest.
Right. And I think he just enjoys, yeah. yes, he enjoys the cruelty. Right. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I think that's something that's really, really fascinating. And, it allows you to have an interesting episode then, because you have a broad spectrum of characters that they meet in North Star. Because then on the other side, you know, you have the teacher, we learn who she is and why she is the way she is, because she's mm-hmm. actually, you know, a quarter Skagarin. And so you have this wide gamut of people. And I think that's what makes this just really, really interesting as an episode, to see how they would all respond to the realization that, yes, actually Earth isn't just a myth. It is real. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
same thing they found out on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, they did. Just a very different version of that. Less angels, less said about the end of Battlestar Galactica, the better. But I'm not a fan of the way that series ended.
We'll save that for our
Battlestar Galactica rewatch. Podcast. Yeah, there you go. This episode is such a classic episode of Prejudice. And one of the things you mentioned that I think really keys into this, Archer himself says, we've put away those things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Archer this season is also struggling with the preconceived notions that he has about the Zindi and mm-hmm. How to deal with those, right? And to act on them or to pull back mm-hmm. and allow himself to possibly have an open mind, which we saw a little bit of in The Shipment. And so this episode kind of continues that thought process in the sense of continue to drive home the thematic nature that is going to be flowing through this entire season for the character of Archer and his struggle then to figure this out mm-hmm. And figure out the season and will he let his prejudices and preconceived notions drive him, or will he be somebody who is willing to be open-minded? And that, again, is, I think, a thing that makes this a really interesting episode to have in this season, kind of like it's kind of right in the middle of it, right? We're not quite halfway through the season yet, but we're almost there. Mm-hmm. And so this is a nice place to be able to have this episode, I think.
Mm-hmm. Another reason I think all this works well in this episode is that the casting is so good. So we talk about the sheriff. Glenn Morshower, I think, was perfectly cast mm-hmm. for this role because he has the accent, he has the kind of mannerisms that fit the character in a way that really feels natural, not like someone trying to pretend to be this sheriff. And he has he's really good at conveying a thoughtfulness towards this situation and towards the Skagarins, as you mm-hmm. mentioned. Did you realize that Morshower was the navigator on the Enterprise B in Star Trek Generations?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's played actually five characters in Star Trek. He's a bridge officer in Peak Performance. He's Orton in Starship Mine. And he's a Makra Order Guard in Resistance. MacReady is really the role I always think of when I think of him. But it is interesting that he was in Generations as well. And you just really wouldn't recognize him.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I love these connections that some actors have to Star Trek where you just really don't realize they're there. But, you know, apart from him, I think that James Parks as Bennings was cast really well. And Emily Burgle as Bethany also was really, really great. And
yeah, she's fantastic, I think.
Yeah, I've also heard that they were considering somehow making her a regular character because, you know, she plays so well in the show.
I think, a place where if you had been able to, you know, possibly go back in like fifth season, you could absolutely have had her progress and become a character that is a part of the series because of where, you know,
maybe they swing back by and they pick her up after they get rid of the Zindi. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess they can't really swing back by the way that all ultimately plays out, but
don't really get that opportunity, unfortunately.
They could just ask for some more help from Wells and they could zip back over there. So
this is true.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the casting is really good in this episode, and I think it makes the story work. I think it's important for making the story feel realistic, and you can actually get invested in the characters. So whereas those original series episodes that were sort of this style are a lot more about the situation that the Enterprise crew found themselves in, this one's a lot more about the characters and how the situation is affecting these characters, particularly Bethany and the Skagerrans. But even the sheriff, you know, he's not thrilled with the situation. And I think he struggles with how to maintain the balance and prevent people like the deputy going overboard and using violence against the Skagerrans when there's no actual need to do so. And I think that Morshauer conveys that well, that struggle well. Yeah. So moving towards the end of the episode, I really like the fact that this story has a positive ending in terms of the way that Archer handles the situation. Now, it could have a little bit to do with the fact that he's actually dealing with humans, not with just some planet that kind of mirrors human society for whatever budgetary reasons brought that about on the original series. But there is just a lot more thoughtfulness to giving the humans on this planet and the Skagerrans the tools that they need to try to heal together and to create a better society for them to live in together. So that, you know, Archer says, eventually we'll try to send ships back here and pick you up. But I think that when we do arrive again, the people who come will find that this world is different than it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fascinating things to me is, you know, because the Skagerrans had brought the humans here, you know, we don't have any prime directive type discussions, right? And, you know, I think this is one of those places where when Trip says, and I think he rightly says, you know, these are humans, we can't just do nothing. You know, we have a responsibility to them. And I think that it makes this then a really interesting problem and conundrum then that Archer has to face. Like, what do I do here? How do I figure this out? Especially when I really can't bring them with us. You know, there's no way for me to be able to do that. We're not going to be able to. We don't have a ship big enough, you know, and we've got a mission to complete. And so I think that is a great aspect of this episode. But then, you know, like you said, giving them the tools that they need to be able to teach themselves how to overcome the place that they're in, the prejudices that they hold, by helping them to be able to, again, have that larger focus, right? Not just on themselves now, but the larger view of humanity, larger view of the galaxy. That is really fascinating. And you end up with that wonderful moment, you know, at the end where, you know, she's teaching and, you know, the sheriff comes in and he raises his hand. He wants to see it. You know, I mean, like, to be able to have the experience of knowing where your species has gone, and then the byproduct of that, of being able to then think, okay, this is where we could go as well. Like you said, it does create that hopeful future. And isn't that one of the things that most people tend to enjoy about Star Trek, which is the idea that there is hope for the future? And so this is very much a microcosm of Star Trek on a on the more macro level, right? This represents the whole of what Star Trek has been doing for almost 60 years now. And so I think that's a really fascinating thing. And again, it creates, I think, a really enjoyable watch of an episode. And kind of the beauty of this episode, too, is that, you know, it's one of those that you can then pop in at any moment, regardless mm-hmm. of whether you watch the whole season or not, because it's a very classic Star Trek episode in that sense.
Right. You can watch this without knowing what's going on with Zindi, really, and the story works just fine. Now, another thing Archer does in the process of helping them is he pulls the Picard maneuver. You know what I'm talking about? He takes Bethany up to the ship,
oh, yes.
takes her to the window, yep. shows her the planet outside,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
How many times has Picard done that? Of course, Lily in First Contact, for sure. Yale in the episode First Contact. So I got the same name there. He does it in Justice, again, to show that the ship is not a god.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nuria in Who Watches the Watchers. Like, this is the maneuver, right? You got the Riker maneuver, you got the Picard maneuver.
Yeah, you know, the Picard maneuver definitely has less, you know, legs over chairs, that kind of thing.
I thought you were going to say the Riker maneuver has fewer windows. The ladies are saying, I can't see the planet from the bedroom. There are no windows in here. What's going on?
But no, I do think that that's an interesting moment, especially for her, because, you know, she's this character who has always had this idea that the possibility of there being more, and being willing then to be the person who's willing to do more than, you know, kind of like her culture allowed for people that were, you know, mistreated and everything. And so, yeah, I think that that's really, really well done. And so... yeah, it makes for a great end to the episode in that sense.
Right. So we talked a little bit earlier about if the series had gone 7 seasons, bringing the Skagarins back would have been an ideal, you know, an obvious thing to do. That didn't happen, but it did happen in the books. So Christopher L. Bennett in The Buried Age, which is a lost era novel, said that Guinan was involved with a group of anthropologists who discovered what the Skagarins were doing on Earth in the 19th century, which I think is a really nice little tie-in to Time Zero on The Next Generation. So we get a little bit more about what Guinan was doing on Earth back at that time. And then James Swallow, our good friend, who put both of us into novels, by the way.
Yeah.
By name.
Who is just on Literary Treks recently, so.
Yeah, exactly. Always loved James. He had a Skagarin member of the crew on the Titan in Sight Unseen. And then more recently, John Jackson Miller has done stuff with Skagarins in a novel, which you've read
and
really love.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So I think you encourage everyone to read
that novel
in particular, right?
Yes, I great Strange New Worlds novel. The story was fantastic. We actually got to interview John Jackson Miller there for Literary Treks. So highly recommend that book. It's a hefty tome and it's so good. It really just, it'll suck you in and it won't let you go until the book's over. I really liked that book. So yeah, the fact that they have followed up, you know, with these characters has been fascinating to me and really fun to me that they've not allowed this to kind of go by the wayside in the novels. But yeah, this was always just kind of like a hanging thread for the Enterprise series and definitely deserved a follow-up. And I'm glad that there were authors who were willing to work this into their stories so that, you know, we got more of them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, any final thoughts? And what's your rating for this one, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, I like this episode. I think it's a good episode. I really enjoyed rewatching it. I enjoyed the conversation that, you know, we got to have because of it. And this is a very strong episode of the season for Enterprise. And it is not an unworthy detour, I think, for the series as well. And so I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 Skagaran whiskeys. I know that they're illegal, but it's really delicious stuff. So what about you, Chris?
Yeah, I've always liked this episode. I'm not sure why some people don't. It's fun in the midst of a very serious storyline, but it also has its own serious message, as we've discussed, which I like that they're able to mix in the light moments, like T'Pol lying about what happened to their horse and Trip trying to ride the horse.
Yeah.
Our friend Keith DeCandido, in his rewatch, he mentioned, he had a great line. It says, Florida man thinks he can ride a horse due to watching Westerns, results unclear.
Yeah. There's this. I've seen every John Ford Western. Come on.
Yeah, right. There's just this look that Connor gives the horse when the horse isn't going yet. Kind of like,
it's very funny. Oh,
come on. Why aren't you going? This is how they do it in the movies.
Yeah.
I love that little thing. So, no, it's a really good episode. Very good episode. So, I'm going to give it 9 harmonicas.
Excellent.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on North Star as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So, if you're not yet a member and you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will come to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm. And if your podcast player of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get those from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not being a horse's ass in the neighborhood saloon, where can people find you?
Wow, well, I guess when you're not, I'm not
word
being a jerk.
Gets around, Matthew.
Yeah, apparently. Too much Skagaran whiskey. But you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. You can also, of course, find me here on the network and the 602 Club talking about all of those franchises we love outside of Star Trek. Plus, a lot of great Star Trek talk here with you, Chris Jones, especially as we look forward to the return of Saddle Up with Strange New Worlds coming back. That's right. Talk about some Western fun. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One's Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then I'm over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out how to ride a horse that, of course, you've only seen Westerns and trying to figure out how to do, where can people find you?
Luckily, I think maybe I have ridden horses more than Connor Trenier has, but I don't know.
Apparently.
At least more than Trip Tucker has, let's put it that way.
I was about to say, that's because it was just good acting.
It was good acting. Connor's actually probably an expert. Maybe he and William Shatner ride horses together every Sunday, I don't know. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all the shows with you, including Saddle Up, as you mentioned. Looking forward to doing that again here soon. And you can also find me in the back catalog on many shows and in social media. You can find me everywhere. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I think I'm a clone now. We'll find out next week as we talk about Similitude.
Oh, man. Well, I can't wait for that to happen, Chris. So let's go.
Well, Matthew, I think I'm a clone now. We'll find out next week as we talk about Similitude.
Oh, man. Well, I can't wait for that to happen, Chris. So set course for home. No, that's not it. Chris, I can't wait for that to happen. So let's go.
Let's go. Yeah, we can't set course for home until we find the Zindi weapon. So.